In Scotland, when friends get together, they blether. When these three friends happen to be Scottish Blue Badge tourist guides, you can be sure that the country that they're so passionate about will be right at the heart of their discussions. Be it contemporary or historical, culinary or cultural, reminiscence or anecdote, from accommodation to zoos, the chat will range right across the entire alphabet of topics and issues that are live and happening in Scotland right now. We hope that you'll join us. There's nothing to beat a richt good blether.
And you could also join in our blethers on social media. You can find us as at Scottish Blethers on both Facebook and Instagram. We post additional content during the week that supports the podcast episode.
We love making the podcast and would love it if you could share them with your friends and leave a review on the platform of your choice.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Scottish Blethers. I'm Liz Lister.
And I'm Helen Houston.
And this may be Series 2, Episode 10, Helen, but guess what?
Liz, I'm just thinking it myself. It's 100 in total.
It's 100 episodes. It's our centenary, Helen. What a special occasion.
I can't believe this. When we started this way back in COVID lockdown, did we ever think? It's fabulous. Well done, Liz.
It's a big shout out to all those that are still with us. It never ceases to amaze me. But for all those that have given us support, it's all down to you.
Yeah, great patience, all of you. And you've come with us. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so we're a bit of a double act. Yeah, we like a good blether. So we thought for this 100th edition that we would take the topic of famous Scottish double acts. I'm not saying we're famous, but we're certainly a double act. But looking at people that have a little more public acclaim, perhaps, than we do. So looking at some of the Scottish double acts that have occurred over the years. Comedy, first of all. Who do you think of when you think of Scottish double acts from the world of comedy, Helen?
Oh, Liz, I've always got to think of Francie and Josie, the two of them, the Glasgow Spivs, in their red and blue suits, slightly shorter trousers than they should have. I just say, hey, Francie. Oh, aye, Josie.
Yeah, I mean, for most of these, we've got to look back to childhood, you know, growing up. And people that are younger listeners and non-Scottish listeners will think, what on earth are they on about?
Yes.
But a lot of the humour, it came with the television. You know, that your entertainment was sitting round the television with your family. And a lot of the programmes that went on STV, Scottish television, were these classics that brought onto our screens many of the people that we look back on with such fondness. And Francie and Josie were among them. Very much Glasgow Patter, Gleska Patter.
Yeah. And the thing is, talking of television, Liz, that they actually spent a lot of time opening the radio rentals TV shops when they were coming, when nobody bought television, everybody rented television. And we would stand outside the shops looking at the shows in the window, on the televisions in the window. And Francie and Josie were the double act that were called upon to open these television radio rental shops.
Yeah, but in Airdrie, there was such a crowd came to see them open the Airdrie shop that they actually smashed the store's window. So that gives you an idea of the kind of popularity they had in the early 1960s. In the double act, Francie was seen as the kind of the less intelligent one, whereas Josie was the smart one that thought it were, but they kept on getting their words round the wrong way, and I was overcome with emulsion.
Oh yeah, I think that's lovely. I love that. And in fact, if you listen around to some of the older people in Scotland, when they're saying about their emotion, they'll talk about emulsion rather than emotion.
There's a lot of words that get mixed up like that. So it was an absolute classic, and the television series took a sort of a format where they would appear on their own, they'd appear together, and then they would always have a song at some point on it. This is going back to the sort of the variety theatres, largely the west coast of Scotland. That's why it was the Gleska Patter. But people loved to go out to the theatre, and then it got transferred onto the television. So there was nothing better than to sit and watch people who were like you. So one of their famous songs was Had a Curry.
If you go to YouTube, you can see it. So it's to the tune of "Oh My Darling, Oh My Darling, Oh My Darling, Clementine," and it's "Had a curry, had a curry," and it goes on about his Balti experience and biryani, and I mean, it's classic Scottish comedy.
But I think, Liz, we should perhaps give credit to the absolute geniuses who were Francie and Josie. This was Jack Mulroy and Ricky Fulton, who were just absolute sort of comedy gods of their day in the 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s in Scotland.
Yeah, and then, of course, Ricky Fulton went on to have a full career after Francie and Josie, and probably best known in Scotland as the Reverend I Am Jolly.
Oh, yes.
He appeared on Hogmanay, it was the Reverend who gave the midnight address, but he was anything but jolly.
Oh, that's right. He was actually doing a very good extreme personification and stereotype of a Scottish minister of the day, you know, just sitting there telling us how terribly bad we had been and what we had to do.
So he had a long, long career in that. And it's interesting because a lot of what we're talking about today is from some time ago. But a lot of the acts today have picked up, and their act encompasses a lot of what Francie and Josie introduced. And there's actually a big tribute act going round at the moment. Johnny Mack and Liam Nolan, they started off at school. They started doing this parody of Francie and Josie, and they've developed it into a tribute act, and it's getting huge acclaim, and they're going round the theatres of Scotland at the moment. And they actually wrote to Francie and Josie asking if they could use their material, and they say that they got a lovely handwritten letter back from both of them before they died. Is Ricky Fulton still alive? I think he died as well, didn't he?
Yes, he died, yes.
Francie died some time ago, but before they died, they got this handwritten letter back saying they'd be delighted for them to use the material as long as they gave it credit and as long as they stuck true to the original scripts, which I think is lovely, lovely people.
That's lovely, because of course Ricky Fulton was very instrumental in writing the script, so he would want his materials to go. It just shows how timeless they were. Just that they're still working really well today, almost unaltered.
Yeah, well, moving a little forward in time, I love Francie and Josie. This I did not get, but very, very popular in Scotland, the Crankies.
Oh, yes. No, I have to say, I probably got them at the day when they were right in their full flush of youth. As they got a little older, I didn't get. The Crankies were a comedy act that started off, it's a husband and wife duo, and Jeanette Tough, she
Tuch, Helen. I think it's Tuch.
Does she call herself Tuch? Okay.
I think that's Tuch.
Right.
I'm not sure, I could be wrong, but I think that's Tuch.
Right. But
there was a boy in my class at school that was Tuch, and it was spelt like that.
And of course I had somebody in my class at school who spelt like that called Tuff. So there we go.
Right. Ask them then.
Yes. Well, Jeanette, the wife, she was very small. She was well under 5 foot tall, and she used to dress as a wee schoolboy with a cap and short trousers. And Ian, her husband, was kind of the paternal figure. And she used to sit on his knee and be like a puppet, you know, a ventriloquist puppet. And as when they were young, that was fine. But when they were older, I found that quite tricky.
Oh, I found it all very, very creepy. Didn't like it at all. But the one thing that did come out of it, they had a catchphrase, which everybody was using for a while. Fan dabby dozy.
And I think people still use it, you know, they're trying to explain how good something was. Oh, it was just fan dabby dozy. But Jeanette had a very bad accident when they were playing a pantomime. She fell out of the beanstalk in Jack and the Beanstalk.
You couldn't write it, could you?
No. Sadly, she hurt herself quite badly, but she did recover from it. But, you know, they've hung up their schoolboy cap and sort of puppet strings now, so they're...
Yeah, in the early 2000s, they had a very long run. They were very popular in pantomime, you can imagine it. But they actually, you know, you think of it just being typically Scottish and whatever, but they, for years, at the SECC Exhibition Centre in Glasgow, they appeared with John Barrowman, a very well-known figure. You know, for about 10 years, they were there every year. And then when he hung up his shoes and wasn't doing the pantomime anymore, they got the Hoff, David Hasselhoff. He joined it in 2015. He was with the Crankies. So
I think that just shows how well they were thought of in, you know, pantomime circles. And these were two, well, John Barrowman's a Scot, but David Hasselhoff, who I think still does pantomime, he just loves the idea of pantomime. And we did pantomime in one of our podcasts, so our listeners can go back if they're not sure what this word pantomime is. But they can go back to one of our podcasts and find out more.
Yeah, but you tend to think that this would be quite parochial, it'd just be Scottish audience, but they actually appeared again, another classic of childhood days, Cracker Jack.
Oh, yes.
Remember Cracker Jack? Well, they were regulars on Cracker Jack, so I think...
Liz, you've already scored 3 cabbages.
If you don't understand that, go back and look at YouTube of Cracker Jack. I think that the BBC of the 60s and 70s and sort of the end of the 20th century liked to parody Scots. And that's why I think many of these were brought on. And so, you know, if you try to think of any contemporary comedy double act, it's very difficult. I couldn't come up with any. The nearest I came up with was the Two Ronnies, because Ronnie Corbett, half of the Two Ronnies, is Scottish.
Yeah, and they worked well together. And of course, again, it was a parody because Ronnie Corbett is, I think, what is it? Vertically challenged, I think is the correct word, isn't it? Vertically challenged.
Right. Yes. Tiny. Yeah, but they made it on the BBC. They were kind of a more sophisticated Morecambe and Wise, if you like. That was very satirical, the work that they did. But they did have the catchphrase, Helen, which is a good one from us. Can you remember the Two Ronnies catchphrase? Yes.
Well, that's all we've got time for. So goodbye from him. Or goodbye from me. Goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him. And then both together, good night.
Good night.
Yeah, so a bit like ours when we finish up this. But again, I can't think of any double acts nowadays.
There are some musical ones.
Yeah.
Musical, and we'll come on to the musical ones in a minute or two. But I think we've gone out of the comedy ones. There's one touring in Glasgow at the moment called The Dolls.
Right.
And that's two actresses who dress up as house cleaners.
Right.
And they're touring in Glasgow. But they both have, if you like, really steady day jobs. One at the National Theatre of Scotland and one on a Scottish TV programme, a series called River City. And should maybe give them a wee name call as well. Just
The Dolls. It's like Mary Doll on Rhapsody Nesbit, but I'm afraid it's too cutting edge for me.
I was just going to give them a shout out, Liz, just because we're calling them The Dolls, but it's Gail Telfer-Stephen and Louise McCarthy, the two actresses who are really filling the theatres at the moment in their programme, in their play, The Dolls.
All right, well, another one, they're not exactly contemporary now as a comedy act, but both of them are going very strong still, very, very high profile. And that's Alan Cumming and Forbes Mason.
Oh, yes.
Because they were Victor and Barry.
Yes, and they met at what is now the Royal Conservatoire, but it was the Scottish Drama School. And they met there and putting on a show for the final year students. They wrote this and called themselves Victor and Barry. And then they took it to the Edinburgh Fringe. And those of you who have been in Edinburgh during the Edinburgh Festival, the International Festival, and walked down the high street and been confronted by all these people dressed up handing out flyers for their show, well, Alan Cumming and Forbes Mason did the same thing. So they really feel for them. But they both went on to great dizzy heights. Alan Cumming now internationally famous, and Forbes Mason is a writer, producer, director, and very much part of the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Yep. I mean, people will know Alan Cumming because he's absolutely huge. He's probably best known for his performance of Cabaret on Broadway, but then he got into a lot of film. He was in Spice World with the Spice Girls, two of the Bond films, Eyes Wide Shut and Goldeneye, and he still goes on today. He's particularly known for his one-man Macbeth. Bent is another one that he got great acclaim for, and recently, and it didn't go down so well with the critics, was Burn, which was about Robbie Burns. So, you know, very, very popular at the moment, often on your television, but he's just hit the headlines within the last few weeks because he's with the death of the Queen, he's handed back his OBE. He feels that it doesn't sit well with all of the colonial injustices, so he's decided to hand it back.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Liz, that many of the people we're talking about were honoured in the New Year's or the Queen's Birthday Honours list and have got MBEs or BEMs, British Empire Medals, for services to either theatre or charity. So many of the people we're talking about have got these medals.
And there's something that they raise. This is Alan Cumming and Forbes Mason, or Victor and Barry as the comedy alter egos. But when they started their act, it was all very much about satire. They were both of them very into satire and lampooning people. So when they did this performance for the drama students back in 1982, what they were taking was the gentrification of the West End of Glasgow and people putting on posh accents and whatever. So it was all very much about taking the mickey out of these posh West End people. But when they took it down to London, comedy, as they say, doesn't always travel well. They don't get the Scottish humour, the parody, the surrealism of it. And so they did a documentary which was about the parochialism of the London people. How would it travel? You know, just doing the exact opposite to the London folk that people do. But it's a common theme coming through it when you take the double acts and transfer them to a wider audience. It's about many people get told to lose their accent. Their accent could be a problem. If you want to succeed, you're going to have to lose it. So we'll come back to that with another famous double act.
Yes, I was just thinking that Liz will come back.
And sorry, one other quote before I leave them, which applies to all the double acts. Double acts are very intense. You know, you're together so much. And Alan Cumming describes it as like marriage without the sex. So that's about us, Helen.
You're good to me. I think it doesn't bear thinking about, Liz.
That's true. An image. Right, carry on.
I'm just going to say that they took that Victor and Barry into a TV sitcom that they did called The High Life, but there wasn't Victor and Barry, but the two people that they were portraying were very much Steve McCracken and Sebastian Flight were the characters in this sitcom, but they were very much based on Victor and Barry.
Yeah, they were two air stewards. That's what I know them best for. I'm not really familiar with that one. I love Alan Cumming. I mean, he's one of my heroes. Yes. Absolutely love Alan Cumming. But I remember them as the air stewards rather than as Victor and Barry.
That's right. And of course, in the same vein, you've got another Victor. You've got Jack and Victor.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
Yeah. This is a TV programme that was written by Ford Kiernan and Greg Hemphill, who played the lead characters Jack Jarvis Esquire and Victor McDade, two old pensioners living in Glasgow. And just it was called Chewing the Fat. They would just sit and just chat, a bit like Scottish Blethers, really, Liz, if you think about it. Two old pensioners chewing the fat.
Yeah, and I mean, it was so successful that it came out of Chewing the Fat and actually became Still Game, which has been a huge success. Yes. And it just ended up, its final series was in 2019, and you'd have thought that somebody had died when it had its final episode. Everybody sat and watched it. But there's fantastic characters in that. Yeah. And I have to say that my husband and I often liken ourselves to Jack and Isa.
I was just going to say that's the thing. That's why they're so popular. And in fact, practically all the double acts we've talked about, people could relate to them. You know, they could say, oh, my goodness, that's just like us, or as you say, Jack and Isa, you and Brian.
Yeah, I think when you look back, the difference looking back to the older acts is that there was an innocence. You know, it was all so simple. There was a little bit of risky humour, but none of the sophistication that you've got in comedy these days. I mean, Still Game was very contemporary and cutting edge, but still with the Glasgow humour running right through it. But I think when you go and look back to the musical double acts, it really, you know, they're a wee bit saft. I've been watching YouTube sort of it, and it's so innocent that, you know, it's a mile away from comedy today.
And I think probably, Liz, at the time a lot of these double acts were at their height, there was no such concern or worry or about PC being politically correct. Absolutely. Because that was an unknown term. Absolutely. And so they were just being absolutely natural, and nobody was picking them up as being offensive or anything. Sometimes you look back now, in today's terms, they could be seen as offensive.
Definitely.
But they were just, at the time, as you say, an innocence, and that's the way people were, and no offence was taken.
Well, I mean, when we look back on it, we think no offence was taken because they were reflecting society.
Yes.
But of course, offence was being taken. It's just that we were such a monocultural society that there was no voice to speak up. But definitely that is one thing that runs right through it as you go back and look at it. But talking about innocence and saft, one that I love them, Fran and Anna.
Oh, don't. Don't listen.
We regularly refer to ourselves as Fran and Anna.
Oh, dear. If you go onto YouTube and look at them, we don't look like Fran and Anna.
Not when we go out.
When we're sitting here doing our podcast, you should just see us in our tartan miniskirts and fishnet tights. No, don't. You wouldn't like it, especially if you're out on a run listening to this. You wouldn't like it.
They were absolutely brilliant. They were two Scottish sisters, and again from West Coast Coatbridge, where my mum was born. And this, we were thinking about all of these memories that I have. That was in my gran and grandpa's house, which was in Coatbridge, sitting round the fire watching the television. But they were a singing duo, and I've been looking back at their YouTubes, and they had beautiful voices. There's one where it was their final concert, and they're old by this time, still in their full regalia, but they're sitting and they're sitting together, and they do an Italian version of Auld Lang Syne. And I can never remember which one's which, but I think it's Anna says to Fran, come in close. And the two voices harmonising, absolutely beautiful.
They came from a musical family. They had five siblings, and all of them were very musical. Their father was a ventriloquist, so they grew up with music ringing in their ears and everything. So they've obviously, over the years, they perfected their singing to that extent. But they travelled all over, the two of them, and they were almost like twins. They were together the whole time, lived together, never married, right through their lives. They were always together.
Yep, sharing the house in Coatbridge. Yeah, but they started off as the Prince Sisters, as a normal singing act. They got huge international acclaim. They weren't known at home, but they went off on the cruise ships through the 1950s and the 1960s. And although they were internationally recognised, they even met Princess Grace of Monaco and counted her amongst their friends. They didn't have a name at home until they changed their name to Fran and Anna. They got into all the tartan kitsch, dressing up with the matching tartan hats, and they also had a big feather and wee mini skirts, and then this, what was called a jabot, I think, which is that frilly lace at the front of it, and tartan mini dresses. And away they went, and it was said that they even wore the tartan outfits to bed. They never took them off. They were always, even when they went out shopping, they always had these tartan outfits on.
Yeah, and they appeared on TV again, television making a big name for them on things like the Terry Wogan Show. Now, Terry Wogan was an absolute institute of British television at that time, and they appeared in his show and just became very famous thereafter.
Yeah, and Thingamajig was another popular one on STV. So they got a huge name at home. They were always parodied. It's called the Gruesome Twosome. But as I say, they were talented underneath it. But what they did was to hype up the Scottish kitsch, if you like. I mean, the songs that they sang were Blah Blah, My Kilt's Awa', My Wee Button Ben, Will You Stop Your Tickling Jock, I Love a Lassie, all that sort of thing. Yeah. Again, go back and have a look at it on YouTube.
Yeah, but they died sort of during the early 2000s, but they were performing right to the very end. And, you know, I think they're just lovely to look at, but a bit like Harry Lauder, the sort of the image of Scotland that we're trying to erase at the moment. But as people, they were great fun.
It was interesting that we only got to know their ages when they died. Because for as long as they were performing, they were perpetually 21. I mean, these wee mini dresses on women who were probably in their 70s, we could get away with it, Helen. We could go back to the tartan kitsch.
Oh, gosh, that would
I think
be just...
they have better legs than we've got, mind you.
I think it would frighten the horses.
I think so. But talking another double act, musical double act of that time, again, when you talk about talent, they had it in abundance, the Alexander Brothers.
Oh, yes. Yeah. But they were quite wooden when they were standing on stage, weren't they? And singing and performing. But they had beautiful voices and very clever musicians.
Yep. Tom and John, or he was called Jack Alexander. And they had a musical mother. And although there wasn't a lot of money in the family, they were encouraged to take music lessons. So Tom was an expert on the accordion and Jack on the piano, and both of them as singing. So they won lots of talent competitions. They started off, they were painters and decorators by day, and they would go around the pubs and the music halls by night. And then they got spotted, and the rest is history.
Yes, but what was nice that while they were painting and decorating, gosh, I wish they were around today, Liz. Desperate for a painter and decorator to come in and do the house. But they used to go around, do charitable events and go around old people's homes, care homes, etc. And so they were just nice lads.
They were. And what is interesting is that when you think of the 60s and the sort of Petula, Clark and all of them, a lot of artists had Tony Hatch to direct their work. Well, Tony Hatch actually directed the first album that the Alexander Brothers made back in 1961. Of course, the one that they're most famous for is Nobody's Child, 1964.
Yes, that's a very sad song, but I mean, even now, when you say the name Nobody's Child, people remember the words. No, just like a flower, I'm just growing wild. No mommy's kisses and no daddy's smiles. Nobody wants me. I'm nobody's child. And I just want the tears start to roll down your cheeks. But that was the time that was being sung. We were in the age of children being put into orphanages. Rather than going fostered into families, they were put into orphanages, a big house full of children. Yeah. Nobody's child.
I mean, nowadays it doesn't bear thinking about, but again, looking back, I can remember, lived in Inverness, to go down to the shops, we had to walk past an orphanage and seeing all these children lined up looking through the railings. So it struck a note. And in Scotland, when they released Nobody's Child, it sold more than the Beatles. It outsold the Beatles in Scotland. So, you know, it was obviously striking a chord with a lot of people.
Yes, absolutely. And then they went on and did a lot of the traditional Scottish songs as well. And they toured internationally over to Canada, America, Australia, just where all the expats were. Yep. And they had big audiences.
One of their most famous fans was Charlton Heston. He loved them.
Yes.
And so they went and performed there in Los Angeles. And we seem to have had a tradition of producing famous double acts, musical double acts, either singers or very often they were instrumentalists, and I could combine the two. So another one that I remember back from the days of Thingamajig and the White Heather Club on the television, do you remember Robin Hall and Jimmy McGregor?
Oh, yes. They were great. They used to appear on the Tonight programme with Cliff Mitchellmore, I think it was, and they always kind of almost finished up. That was a serious sort of almost political discussion programme. And then they finished up with their beautiful voices singing Scottish songs.
Yep, traditional ones that we still remember today, like the Mingley Boat Song, Cooter's Candy, You Canny Shove Your Granny Off a Bus. Good children's songs. We'll come back and we'll do one on that, looking back to songs of our childhood. But they actually got spotted by the American singer Paul Robeson. And that's what launched their career. But then their agent got a phone call out of the blue from the BBC TV's Tonight's show, and it said, it's Burns night and we need two. It was a current affairs program, it wasn't a musical program, but they needed somebody to close the show on Burns night. And their agent said, oh, I've got two Scottish singers, they're absolutely perfect for this, they know the whole repertoire of Burns. And of course it was a complete lie, they didn't know any Burns songs. So on the way to the show they had to learn up a Burns song, Rantin' Rovin' Robin, to perform on it. And that was it, BBC fame. And they went from strength to strength.
Yes, and I think the thing too say about all of these people we're talking about, they were very talented in their own right. They hadn't just kind of been spotted and wow, right into the spotlight. They had worked hard, they'd tread the boards, and they had a big repertoire. To learn a Burns song sort of in the taxi going to the studio would not be difficult for these two very good musicians.
Yeah, and that tradition continues, because two that are very much at their height at the moment, two musicians, Ally McBain and Phil Cunningham.
Oh, yes. The Ally McBain is a Shetland fiddler, a brilliant fiddler, and Phil Cunningham is a brilliant accordionist, both very good musicians. In fact, if you were looking at some of the Celtic Connections that's on in Glasgow at the moment, they would both be performing there.
Yeah, they've won so many awards, but Phil Cunningham in particular never seems to be off our televisions at the moment. He's a world famous accordion player and also a composer as well. And he was voted in a Scotsman poll, he was voted one of Scotland's 25 most influential people, because he really does have complete mastery, not only of his accordion, but you know, just general musical mastery.
Yes, I think he does a lot of, becomes musical director for a lot of things as well because of this, you know, mastery that he's got. But I remember watching a TV program, oh, quite a number of years back, about violinists, and it was Yehudi Menuhin, who was that wonderful classical violinist. He was looking at other violinists, Ali McBain and Shetland violining, and Stefan Grappelli at jazz violining, and just each of them trying each other's musical genre. And they all agreed they were all in very distinct but very difficult musical genres. So it was a worthwhile finding that one if you can find it.
Too brilliant. And the other one that I remember from Phil Cunningham is when he went across to the Appalachian Mountains and he looked at the impact that the Scottish traditional music, fiddle music, accordion music has had in the development of the Appalachian sound. So excellent programmes, really, really talented between the two of them. Some of the best traditional musicians that you could ever hear.
Yeah, and they're still there. They're still on the telly. Anytime there's a Scottish evening, you'll probably find Phil and Ali will be there.
They were. And talking about contemporary singing duos, double acts, we couldn't possibly end the show without the biggest, possibly the biggest of all time in terms of global recognition. If it's Alan from Radio Leaving podcast, I am disgusted with you. You know, to say that you don't like the Proclaimers.
Oh no! How can anybody not like them?
No, they are absolutely epitomised Scotland, icons of Scotland, I would say.
And I think possibly I can understand, because they are a wee bit of an acquired taste, because we mentioned how people were asked to change their accent from Scottish accent to something more English or sort of American. They were asked to do that by one of the record companies and they absolutely said, no, we are Scottish. This is our accent. We're talking about Scotland. We're singing about Scotland. We will sing it in our accent. And they changed record labels. And the rest is history. They became very famous, still with their Scottish accent.
Yep, they should explain for anybody who doesn't know the background to the Proclaimers that they are identical twin brothers, Craig and Charlie Reid. They were born in the 60s and they lived in Leith. They still have very strong ties to Leith today, very big supporters of Hibs football team. But then they moved to Edinburgh and then Cornwall and finally back to Auchtermuchty, which is in Fife, a strong association with. They actually got into their music through punk. In the 1980s, it was punk that brought them in. They started off as an acoustic duo, but then they started to move more towards rock. And I think today, they've still got this huge diversity of influences, country music, folk music, punk music, that still, and as you say, Helen, very much taking contemporary issues as the lyrics for their songs.
Yeah, they're very Bob Dylan-like in the writing. If you listen to the lyrics of their songs, they're absolutely brilliant. The Letter from America, I play a lot on coaches when I'm taking people round, just to tell the story of Scotland and what has gone. They're really good.
Yeah, but I think probably when people think of the Proclaimers, the anthem that you hear all over the world today, 1988, it's I'm Gonna Be 500 Miles. And it didn't just top the charts in the UK, but Australia, Iceland, New Zealand. But what I remember most about this, I remember it very clearly, that they appeared on Top of the Pops. It was actually 1987, but it was December, and it was 1988 that they topped the charts. But they came on to Top of the Pops. And if you think about it, 1987, who was on Top of the Pops? It was all the Stock Aitken and Waterman acts, Anita and Sonia, and you know, all of these sort of glam rock. And then you've got these two identical twins from Auchtermuchty belting it out, I'm going to be 500 miles.
Yes, I know. But and what was it said? They stuck out like a pair of sore thumbs amongst all of that. Well, but they didn't change. They didn't put on glam, glitzy stuff to be there, to fit in. They were themselves, and good on them.
Whenever I hear 500 miles, I remember my husband and I went on a road trip and we were covering various places in the States, but we heard it in New York as we walked into the reception in New York. It was playing, but the one I'll always remember, it was playing in Memphis as we were walking around Memphis in 100 degree heat and nobody else was on the streets. It was coming out of a bar in Memphis. But do you remember, Helen, when we go to the Rick Steves conference in Edmonds every year, there's a talent show in Rick's house and each of the countries has to put on something. So all the Scottish tourist guides did
But five.
I'm going to be 500 miles. Yes. So we had to choreograph it. And I still, to this day, whenever it's on, I go, 2, 3, 4,
we will walk. I know.
That's on YouTube as well, I think, somewhere.
Yeah. But there was very good. And that 500 miles, you just need to put on the first couple of bars when you're playing it, and everybody knows what it is. It's very, very distinctive.
And it's been used so many times. I remember Peter Kay and Matt Lucas using it for Comic Relief in 2007. Yes. So there was their version of it. So lots. And of course, when we think of the Proclaimers, also Shrek, I'm on my way.
Yes.
Famous in Shrek as well. So timeless. Play at funerals, play at weddings, everything in between. It's a global anthem.
It is. And, you know, we just love all our Scottish double acts. But as I say, in our centenary programme episode, I think it was quite apt that we play double acts for you and I, Liz, the Scottish Blethers double act as we are now.
Yeah, I mean, the Proclaimers have got nearly 3 decades of a career behind them now. I don't know how long we'll keep going, Helen, but we'll keep on. We will walk 500 miles. We'll keep going.
But I'm just thinking, I don't even know if we've got three decades to do anything.
I don't know if we've got 3 episodes ahead of us, but whatever, we'll keep going. So do you have a word of the week, Helen?
Well, I was just thinking, going back to the Francie and Josie, that they talk about something we still talk about, a plouc. Does everybody know what a plouc is? P-L-O-O-K. That's that thing that appears out of nowhere on your face, the pimple. At the least appropriate moment, the pimple pops out. Well, we call that a plouc, which I think is a much better and more descriptive word than pimple. Pimple sounds quite soft, but a plouc is just what it is. It's a plouc.
If you're Scottish, you know exactly what a plouc is. It's throbbing, it's red. It's the last thing you want. But also, of course, we would refer to somebody as he's a right plouc.
Yes.
Very descriptive. Yes, very good word. Is it a spot? Is it a pimple? Is it a zit? No, it's a plouc.
It's a plouc.
Right, well, my one came from Fran and Anna, you know, and all their couthy songs that they sang. But there's one that they sing, which is Hi, Hi, Weapakai. And I just remembered back to childhood where, you know, if something disappeared, you know, somebody took something and they hid it behind their back or whatever. And where's it gone? Oh, Weapakai. Way up in the sky. So that brought back memories. Way up a kai.
Way up a kai. I'd forgotten that one. That's a really good one. And but that's our words of the week on our centenary anniversary or episode.
Yes. Good to work with you, Helen.
And you, Liz.
But it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And there we have it. The end of another episode of Scottish Blethers. If you'd like to join us on social media, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram as @ScottishBlethers. And if you'd like to leave a review, please do so on your podcast platform of choice. It's cheery bye from me.
Ta-ta the moo from me.
And if I don't see you through the week, I'll see you through the windy from me.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.